Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. On Thursday morning, people who hadn't been paying enough attention to the women's soccer team from Brazil and who expected the U.S. team to cruise into tomorrow's Women's World Cup final in Shanghai, China, got a surprise. Brazil beat the U.S. 4-0. Joining me now to discuss that result and various other aspects of the tournament is Tony DiCicco, the coach who led the women's team to a World Cup championship in 1999. Tony, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thanks, Bill. My pleasure.
Brazil hasn't lost a game, and they haven't been tied in this tournament, but they did seem, I think, more impressive Thursday than they'd previously been. Do you agree?
Well, once they got the lead and they started doing a little bit of samba out there on the field, it looked like the carnival, you know, and they were very impressive.
There has been much discussion of Coach Greg Ryan's decision to replace goalkeeper Hope Solo with Brianna Scurry for the game against Brazil. What impact did that have on the U.S. team?
Well, we don't know totally. I will say that, you know, Greg has gone 50 games without losing, so he's made a lot of very good decisions. But this was, in my opinion, this wasn't a good decision. This was a bad decision. And Brianna Scurry was my goalkeeper in the Olympics, in the World Cup championship run. And I think she's the best female that's ever played that position. But you had a hot goalkeeper. You had a solid defense. And you shouldn't tinker with it. And so I thought Hope Solo should have been the choice for this game. And I think the team struggled with it. And so they weren't in the best place when they played on Thursday.
One of the people who would agree with you about Coach Ryan's decision is Hope Solo. Were you surprised when she said after the game that Coach Ryan had in fact made a bad decision and that she would have stopped the balls that Scurry let in?
Well, I know that's how Hope Solo felt. I was disappointed to see it come across, publicly. Would have preferred to see all that be handled behind closed doors within the team setting. But she was very upset. You know, she had dedicated this World Cup to her father who passed away in June. Her dream was to win a World Cup and be the number one goalkeeper. And in her mind, she had earned that. She was very upset, and unfortunately it came out publicly.
Germany, which beat the U.S. in the semifinals of the 2003 World Cup, are defending champions. They're an organized team. They play with a lot of confidence. Can Brazil samba pass the Germans the way they did the U.S. team?
Well, Brazil is going to be a load for any team they play, especially when they're committed and organized and focused. And they came in with a good focus. I think they lost their focus after they went up 2-0 on Australia in the quarterfinal. Australia made them pay, scored two goals. But Brazil kept their poise and won that game. And I think they learned a lot from that game, that you can't take your foot off the accelerator, not in the World Cup. So I think this is a very, very tasty matchup. I think there's two talented teams. You know, obviously the flair of the Brazilians, the organization of the Germans. But the Germans have technical, exciting players, too. It's going to be a great final. I think it's the two best teams in the final.
Argentina and Ghana ended up on the short end of some lopsided games in this tournament, Tony. But otherwise, most of the games, even the ones involving the semifinalists, Brazil, the U.S., Norway, and Germany, were competitive. Were you surprised at how much various previously not-so-good teams had improved since the last Women's World Cup?
Oh, no, I wasn't surprised. Actually, I was surprised that two quarterfinals were 3-0 wins, and then semifinals were 3-0 and 4-0 wins. That surprised me. I think the average team is definitely better. I also think in this tournament, there was only three teams that could possibly win it, and that was Germany, the USA, and Brazil. And if I look back to 1999, I would include China and Norway. So there was actually more teams that could win it in 1999. Mm. But the average team in this World Cup was much better, and therefore there was some upsets and there was some great group play matches, and it was an exciting World Cup, and I think we're going to see a very, very exciting final.
FIFA, soccer's governing body, has floated the possibility of increasing the number of teams for future Women's World Cups. Is it time for that idea?
Well, it can be done, but if you want more lopsided scores, you can also get that. And what they have to do is there's three or four other European teams that are as good as most and probably many of the teams in the World Cup. There might be one or two other teams in different confederations that could play. But if you go and you take the third team from, South America, they're going to be overmatched by some of the better teams. So I think there needs to be play-in games where maybe the third team from South America has to play off with, you know, the fifth team or sixth team with Europe and to see which one ends up getting in. And that way you'll ensure that a higher-level team gets in. And I think it'll be okay if you do it that way. If you just start adding additional spots to Asia, Africa, South America, you're going to end up with some weaker teams.
The U.S. team can begin looking ahead to 08 when they'll return to China for the Olympics. What does the team have to do to prepare for that competition?
Well, the bar has been set. They need to steal a page from what the Brazilians do. They need to steal a page from what the Germans do and whoever else they think they can pick up something from. But clearly, we need to be more technical. We need to be more technical. We need to have more ability to take on players. And we did at one time, you know, the Tiffany Milbritts, the Mia Hamms. We had players that could go at defenders and terrify them. And now we don't seem to have that same type of player. We seem to be a bigger, stronger team, but not as quick and as agile. And so we need to look and see how we need to tweak it, because I don't think it's a major overhaul. I think it's a tweaking. I think the margin still, even between this game, even though it looks lopsided 4-0, the margin between being a one-goal game or even being a reversal of results is very thin.
Tony DiCicco coached the U.S. women's national team to a World Cup championship in 1999, and he's been tapped to coach the Boston Breakers when the Women's Pro League returns in 2009. Tony, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. My pleasure.
Pilates, a system of physical conditioning involving low-impact exercises and stretches, is supposed to be good for you, but commentator Alyssa Eli thinks that's only partly true.
In a thousand ways each week, the Pilates teacher expects the impossible. Stretch and contract, loosen and tighten, move and hold still. She sees no paradox in it. She's like a Zen master, and her own perfect form gives us hope there's a way past the sound of one hand clapping. She's also full of energetic metaphors that make her point. Just listening is aerobic exercise. Zip those abdominals, she says, and you hear the muscles pulling together with a metallic sound. Stack the spine, she says, as her vertebrae rise in alignment. On our mats, full of effort in middle age, we will our spines to stack and our abdominals to zip. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. The Pilates teacher knows why. She says flexibility depends on time of day and fluid intake. We need to be forgiving, she says. If our class were last thing at night instead of first thing in the morning, we'd all bend deeper and stand straighter. I know it's only 9:30, she says, but let's do 7 more crunches. Crunch sounds like a breakfast cereal, yet the way she uses it, there's perfect health waiting at the end of the meal. Once class ends, so does perfect health. In no time at all, I'm slouching at work or slumped in the grocery line, miles away from enlightenment, full of ordinary preoccupations and postural droop. It happens every week, a disappointment I can count on. Sometimes I hear my teacher's voice. She's sympathetic but firm. Forgive yourself in the morning and try again at night, she might say. Or, happy mind, happy body, zip up those worries, stack that anxiety, drink water for your inflexibility. Her advice reminds me incongruously of an anatomical point I once learned. We are all shorter at dawn and taller at dusk. This seems impossible, yet what good news. Zip, stack, stretch, tighten, and if you don't succeed in the morning, you will at night. I find it astounding, but the Zen master wouldn't. She already knows we grow at every age.
Alyssa Eli is a psychiatrist in Massachusetts. Yachting can make one feel quite big. Maybe it's because the sport is surrounded by old money and bedecked with spiffy caps and really stylish ascots. Or maybe the yachts themselves are what make sailors feel big. Only a Game's Michelle Seaton reports.
This will be a reasonably close finish. I can't judge who's in the front right now.
He's got the foot. Okay, he's got second. I think Biff.
There is a regatta each summer weekend in Marblehead, Massachusetts, a small coastal community north of Boston. But the boats racing here are measured in inches rather than feet. They are built in basement workshops rather than boatyards, and they are all directed by radio signal from the shore of Red's Pond.
Yeah, we knew where all the water went in this pond.
But the people of Marblehead have been watching these races for some 75 years, maybe more. Every few years, someone will clean out an attic and find another old cup from some regatta held during World War I. They know model yachting. So Pete Maxson, president of the American Model Yachting Association, isn't too surprised when a stranger approaches him between heats and offers unsolicited advice. Pete's from Rochester, New York, but he knows about Marblehead race fans.
Don't get botched in, you know what I'm saying? Because if you do in this brief, you get screwed.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Is that your coach?
He is now.
Tape has started.
I would have put him with
1 minute to a mark.
The heats go on all day. In fact, on this particular weekend each year, the one reserved for the Class M Championship, the races go on for 4 days. The men sail and sail, break for lunch, and then sail some more until the judges get tired and tell them to go home. Each heat starts with a recorded countdown. The sailors collect near the starting line with their radio controls and turn their boats around and around, being careful not to cross the line before the buzzer.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
During this heat, boat number 32 sails full tilt toward the line and crosses just at the buzzer. The crowd goes wild.
Oh, my God, that was breathtaking, wasn't it? There's one over there swirling, going nuts.
The men tramp as a group along the shoreline, watching their boats, moving their controls, one of which draws the sails in and lets them out. The other moves the rudder. The wind, what little of it there is, does the rest.
Just one big raft up here.
Ah, I can't see my boat.
Ned Lakeman has been sailing on Red's Pond since, well, he doesn't know how long. In fact, he's not sure how old he is.
Yeah, wait a minute. Jackie, excuse me, how old am I?
82.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I'm 82. My wife says I'm 82.
A minor confusion like this doesn't keep him from winning a few heats, or from dashing up and down the shoreline, or from trading barbs with other competitors, some of whom have also sailed on this pond for longer than they can remember. Lakeman inherited some of his boats from his father, and he can still remember the days when the spectators at Red's Pond included some unsavory types from Boston.
So I suppose it was still in the late 30s that the big black limousine pulled up. Half a dozen men with gray felt hats and pinstripe suits got out. They walked over here. They watched the races for a while, and I began to see they were passing money between each other. And he said, "This is wonderful." He says, "There's no fix." He says, "This is on the legit." And they were a bunch of gangsters from Boston, I presume. But they found something that wasn't crooked.
In those days, model yachting was at its zenith. The sport took off after World War I, when the school curricula began to include woodworking and metalworking, the foundations of model boat building. As young men got better at working with wood and with metal lathes, they built better and more sophisticated boats. Once built, they had to be raced. One of the most popular spots to race them was in Prospect Park in Brooklyn. Model yachting historian Earl Bobert explains that in the 30s, captains rowed beside their boats and adjusted the sails manually.
And, of course, in Victorian time, like in a place like Prospect Park, the only place you could be alone with your paramour was out in a canoe in the middle of the lake, and so there you are, and here are these rowdies with these large model sailboats charging through here, you know, and the thing's going really fast, and there have been collisions and sinkings and contretemps of one form or another as a consequence.
By the mid-1930s, there were 2,000 M-class model yachts registered in the United States. This boat is called the M-class because it was invented in Marblehead. An M-class boat is exactly 50 inches long and has exactly 800 square inches of sail. Earl Bobert explains that the sport wasn't just fun, it was economical.
And it was really popular in the Great Depression because it was very inexpensive. It took time, but it didn't take a lot of money. And so you scrap wood, old bed sheets, scrap metal, and you can make a boat.
Yep. Finished marblehead.
Boy, look at the turnbuckles.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is neat.
When they're not sailing, the men here are talking about boats and looking at each other's boats and dreaming of building more boats. Roger Cousineau has his half-completed marblehead yacht on display. He is surrounded by little plastic packages, each one of which contains a mini turnbuckle or port or cleat. These are custom fittings for small yachts of every type that he makes and sells online. To the men here, he's a minor celebrity.
You must have a very small metal lathe.
I've got very small lathes and mills and a CNC milling machine.
Everyone's got to be made separate?
Everyone is separate.
Like many of the sailors here, Cousineau went to model boat building school up in Maine, where he built his boat's frame from paper plans and then made and laid each plank individually. These planks are 3/8 of an inch wide. The process of planking a boat can take 200 to 300 hours, and Cousineau has enjoyed every one of them. The planks appear to have tiny dowels in them. Cousineau says these are toothpicks pounded in with a hammer.
91 beat them out just by, yep. by a bumper, by a Walmart shower clog. That's what's on the front of that boat.
The winners of each heat vary over the course of the day, but the losers are pretty much the same folks. Retired engineer Andy Abramson is last almost every time. Coming in second to last is a big step up.
I didn't come in last again. Isn't that wonderful?
Abramson really is happy just to be here. He heard about boat building school a couple of years ago, right after he was diagnosed with cancer.
I developed a tumor in acoustic neuroma. I don't have any hearing here, and I don't have any balance. And I had signed up for a regular boat building class. And that winter, I had wind radiation treatment, and I worked on this boat and concentrated on the boat and not on my brain.
Jeez. And starboard.
Model yachting attracts its fair share of retired engineers and scientists. After all, it requires craftsmanship, a love of precision, and quite a lot of free time. Not too many young men are interested in building boats from scratch. Most would rather be playing video games. But when a young man does show an interest, he gets all the encouragement he can stand from more experienced sailors, according to Spectator Al Fearn.
There are what we call, in some of the clubs, young Turks. And we have one in our club in Needham. He's a senior in high school, and boy, does he whip our butts. Excellent skipper. Young kid, just got into it 3 years ago, and he's racing in 3 classes now.
He's a natural.
And just a natural, and he beats us. And, you know, we just get frustrated. But nicest kid. Good parent.
We all adopted him. Yeah. Nice, nice young man.
As the shadows grow long on Red's Pond, the judges look at their watches. Time to pull the boats. Time to tally up and find a winner. But no, the guys want another heat. Just one more heat. Come on, they say. It'll be fun. For Only a Game, I'm Michelle Seaton in Marblehead, Massachusetts.
The boats that have already finished this heat are maneuvering to get off the course and out of the way of the racers and give them a fair chance to finish nicely.
Joining me now to discuss the week's news is Mr. NASCAR himself, the redoubtable Charles P. Pierce, Esquire. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
Based on what the Baseball Hall of Fame is about to acquire, are you tempted to make a trip to Cooperstown?
Well, I don't know I'm never tempted to make a trip to Cooperstown because I've been in the traffic there. But I think this has been handled the right way. I think that the voice of the people spoke true in this one. I would put a large inflatable syringe right next to the exhibit, but that's just me.
We're speaking, of course, about the
Barry Bonds' baseball.
The Bonds home run with the asterisk.
Which will have an asterisk. Now, are they going to put it up?
Yeah, the hall has said, thank you very much.
You're not going to see the asterisk.
Oh, I think
they're going to turn the ball around. There's no way they can do that.
I smell prank. In a recent episode of Officials Gone Wild, we heard about the suspension of an NBA official who had bet on games, and now we've got Officials Gone Wild, the baseball edition. Why won't umpire Mike Winters be working this fall?
Because he was an arrogant toad in a profession full of them, and he got caught. He baited Milton Bradley into losing his temper. Now, you don't exactly need a lot of bait for that.
Not bait, right.
But in the subsequent pushing match with his own coach, Bradley tore a knee ligament and his loss to his team. What is obvious from this is that Major League Baseball believed the account given by the first base coach and not the pile of hooey they were handed by Mike Winters.
Meanwhile, tomorrow, a game in China will determine the 2007 Women's World Cup champion. Everybody who will be involved in that game, please step forward. And you players on the U.S. team, not so fast.
Hey, you know what? Women's soccer has arrived. because there's a legitimate hang the coach from a lamppost.
And not only the coach, the goalie stunk, and I'd have been better.
You know, I think Napoleon Solo's granddaughter there was right on the money. This was an unbelievable – this guy should not be allowed to manage a 7-Eleven, let alone an international sports team. What a disaster.
Well, it is,
what a debacle.
It is fair
what
to
an
say
outrage.
That if you and I had been managing, anybody could have managed and they would have lost to Brazil.
Brazil was magnificent, but the coaching maneuver obliterated the discussion of whether this was Brazil being good or the United States being bad. This was the coach being stupid.
The National Hockey League is set to resume action this weekend, Charlie, with games in London between the Los Angeles Kings and the Anaheim Ducks. Will Camden Town, Twickenham, and Stratford be sufficiently drawn to the parade of the Zambonis?
Let us dig down through the layers of stupid here, okay? This is a league that is desperate for attention on the North American continent. So they kick off their game.
I've got an idea.
In England, on a football weekend, that also happens to be the weekend the Major League Pennant races are coming right down to the wire, featuring two hockey teams from the West Coast, which means your primary audience has to get up and watch this game at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Perfect. The rest of the league starts play on Wednesday. It looks to me as if at least two teams, the New York Rangers and the New York Islanders, are ready.
Biff, bam, pow. You know, they hadn't played since Chris Simon got a 25-game suspension for swinging his stick at Ryan Hallweg of the Rangers. And then they played an exhibition game, and 51 seconds in, people started punching each other.
Is there anything dumber than a brawl during an exhibition game?
Yes, kicking off your season in England with two teams from the West Coast of the United States on a football weekend.
What a sport. As China prepares for the 2008 Summer Olympics, raids on 26 steroid labs have revealed that some of the preparations coming out of China could get various athletes in trouble. Are you prepared to address that issue?
Ruh-roh. Apparently, the Chinese are the raw material supplier for American steroid labs, and the usual suspects are turning handsprings over this massive Operation Raw Deal, which apparently grew out of an operation targeting Mexican steroid labs. So you have the raw material in China, the labs in Mexico, and distribution in the United States, as near as I can tell. And, of course, we are all outraged and wringing our hands over it.
Tennessee women's basketball coach Pat Summitt says that Gino Auriemma, the head coach for the University of Connecticut women's team, knows why she won't agree to schedule Connecticut, but I don't know why, do you?
She doesn't like him, apparently, or that's what Gino Auriemma says. You know, this is a coach who doesn't get along with the men's coach in his own university. You know, Tennessee and Connecticut should play, namely because they're in a sport which is really plagued by the fact that they have so many non-competitive games before they get to their national championship tournament in the spring. The two most high-profile teams in a sport that needs a high profile ought to play. There ought to be a way to do this.
Business Week has published a list of the 100 most powerful people in sports. Were you surprised at who's in the top spot?
I'm not surprised by Roger Goodell, because he has asserted himself right in the middle of when they were probably taking this poll as a powerful commissioner. Tiger Woods is the only active athlete in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that Phil Knight has dropped to eighth. I don't know what that means, but he was in the top three anytime ago. I'm surprised Bud Selig was as high as he was. You know,
were the drug testers.
And, you know, I guess it all depends on what you define as power. But certainly Tiger Woods has as much control over his sport as the commissioner of the PGA does.
There's a story in the news this week about a guy who proposed to his girlfriend by way of a Boston Globe Sunday Magazine crossword puzzle. But it doesn't seem to me that the guy who wrote the story really got the charm of that puzzle into his story.
Well,
what do you think?
He didn't get down to 61 across,
yeah,
which is only blank. NPR show.
Well, yeah.
I guessed only Thistle and Shamrock myself, but I was wrong.
The coach of Oklahoma City's minor league hockey team became something of a hero this week, Charlie. He prevented a possible stampede of Belgian horses at the Oklahoma State Fair, and he didn't need a hockey stick or even a whistle to do it, did he?
No, but he did use the old hockey standby of biting the horse in the ear.
I thought that was a boxing standby.
Doug Sauter, the coach of the Oklahoma City Blazers, obviously knows what he's doing because it worked.
Yeah.
He leaped up on this enormous animal, bit it in the ear, and it stopped, as I would if a hockey coach jumped on my back and bit me in the ear.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. He joins me each week at this time on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for listening to Only a Game. Please check your local listings for the NPR station nearest you to carry our show, and please visit our website, onlyagame.org.